Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder, molesting, running out flames in the buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am podcast network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show. This is our eighth show. This is Rick Redding, your host. Happy to be getting the hang of it here at the Louisville.am network studios in the Highlands. It's the day I'm recording this. It's a beautiful day, August 14th, but I've got some interesting guests today on the show. A lot of issues going on in town that are just kind of fun to talk about. Very interesting, some controversial, and they're really great. In the second half of the show, I'm going to have an interview with Metro Councilman David James. He is my first Metro Councilman that's made it on the guest list here at the Rusty Satellite Show. David is one of my favorites. He's very intelligent. Intelligent man, he's brought some really smart ideas to the council, but we'll talk a little bit about, he had a news conference and was, felt the need to defend himself for his vote on the Barbara Shanklin trial. In fact, he was one of the seven council members who voted to keep Barbara Shanklin after her ethics violations were made public in a trial, and so you'll get to hear what David has to say about that. But first, we're going to talk about media a little bit. One of my favorite topics with Terry Boyd of Insider Louisville. As my regular followers know, I'm a regular contributor at the InsiderLouisville.com website. It's a interesting news organization, and Terry and I we go way back to our days as colleagues at Business First. We were both reporters on. What we'll say in the interview is a very strong staff. We really, in our youth of 15 years ago, really cared and really worked hard and really tried to break stories, do a lot of investigative work there at Business First back in the day. So anyway, I got a chance. I went by Terry's office. It's down there in New Lou. It's right next to the Y Louisville store and very, very secluded, small place. But it's a very Insider Louisville is making great strides in the Louisville media community. It's really, I think, going to be strong for some time to come. That's why I'm a part of it. You can go to InsiderLouisville.com and see all the stories, and especially see my stuff, which is mainly about media on there. So here you go. Here's my interview with Terry Boyd. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, you and I were colleagues at Business First many, many years ago, and back when it was great, right?
Right. That's when it was good. It was a pretty good staff. You, me, Rachel, Kamath, and I've forgotten everybody
else.
Well,
Carrie Stemley was there.
That's right.
Eric Benmore, and we did. We did what I thought was a lot of good work back in the day, but that's a good lead into what we're talking about now. The media has certainly changed since we were working in a newspaper in the 90s. We're both sort of internet entrepreneurs. Tell me about Insider Louisville, how it got started, and a little bit about what you hope to accomplish here.
The funny thing is it probably started when Carol Timmons, who was our editor at Business First, we were having a conversation one day. It was about 1997. And I told her newspapers wouldn't last for another 5 years.
And how'd that go over?
Not well. And she was appalled. And she's just like, what are you talking about? I said, it's this internet. I mean, why would you want to wait for information? The whole idea of waiting the next morning to see what it says in the newspaper, that just, it was clearly that this new delivery platform made newspapers obsolete. And she didn't agree at all. I mean, she just thought I was crazy. Then about 5 years ago, we had a similar conversation, and she conceded that, you know, maybe I had a point.
It will happen someday, I guess. I always say that I don't think, like, the newspaper is ever going to go away, but it's just never going to get any more important than it is now.
No, the newspapers will go away. Newspapers will just be, you know, no company can justify doing anything that's really expensive. Mm-hmm. Making a newspaper is basically a customization of data. And so you have to, you know, see the value in printing it and delivering it. And you think about all the trucks that take the papers to the trucks, that take the paper to the trucks. No one's going to want to do that. It doesn't make any economic sense. The only thing is a few million people are still just too comfortable with print to give it up.
How many times have we heard people say, oh, I just like the feel of the paper in my hands, right? And
well, you know, I'm sure that 1912, there were people who were saying, you know, these cars, this is never going to work. I trust old Betsy to get me a work.
Well, and the other expense that I always talk about is that, you know, we're here in your offices here at Insider Louisville, and it's some nice space, but it's not six floors in the at 6th and Broadway, right? It, you know, your expenses for putting out your product are so much less. And I don't know, talk to me a little bit about where you see about Insider Louisville and where you see it going.
I think that this model really only works on a regional level. So we'll somewhere along the line, we'll have to start looking at other markets. And that's when advertisers will think we're really irresistible, when we can get, you know, if we could get to the Courier gets, I think they still have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 113,000 subscriptions on the daily, then probably 220,000 on Sundays. That's a guess, but I think that's pretty close. If we had a regional market, a daily market of, say, 2 million people, Cincinnati, mm-hmm. Indianapolis, wherever, then yes. I mean, I think that all of a sudden we'd be on par with USA Today and the Wall Street Journal, some of the national news outlets.
Right, and everything's changing, and all that could happen. How long has Insider Louisville been around, and tell me a little bit about the way it's organized.
3 years, and we just started out with a handful of people. It's organized sort of like as a hub and spoke, where there are people, contributors, regular contributors, paid contributors. I like to go on the record saying that we pay people. It's not the Louisville Mag, Louisville.com.
I can testify to that, and as somebody who tried to do a similar thing as you without paying people, and you know, that didn't work out as well. Yeah, I think it's great that you pay.
Well,
pay your
writers. It's not great. I mean, it's essential, because we have to have good people doing good content. I mean, your post with the Courier on the Courier Journal last week was one of our best read posts. I can't go to somebody to just submit that to do it without any real journalistic experience. It's just not going to work for our readers. Our readers are coming to us and expecting more and more all the time. And I'll be honest with you, it's hard to deliver more and more all the time.
Right, because it's the old battle of having enough resources to do what you want. Yeah,
you got to keep the resources amped up. You got to be adding people. We need to add talent. We need to add coverage categories.
Do you now when you talk about how your feedback from your readers and all that? Do you regularly? I mean, I know that back when we're talking about the old days, the newspapers, you know, there's letters to the editor or whatever, but I imagine people just call you on the phone and tell you what they think of your product.
I don't think we get any phone calls, but certainly we get comments on the ends of posts, and Facebook is in Twitter both. Steve Coombs wrote a piece the other day about pay at restaurants, and the last time I looked at it, had about 67 comments.
Wow.
And then I think it was late last week, Steve had a post on this Restaurant Impossible program that's come mm-hmm. into town. And the last time I looked at it, it had 1,900 likes. So 1,900 people shared that. And let's say that each person only has 10 Facebook friends, right? So 1,900, so 19,000, minimum of 20,000 people saw that post.
Yeah. And in my job, I have a Facebook page that I'm in charge of, and interestingly, one of the looks at the future. The first time I saw it was recently at a TV station's proposal, and they were actually selling mentions of your product on their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that is maybe one of the areas it's going to. Well, let me ask you, the question I hear most often on the street when I tell people I'm a Insider Louisville contributor is really, are they making any money? And what's the plan to make money?
Yeah, I mean, well, we stopped advertising because we didn't want to have any carryover contracts when we updated the page, the website in June. So we made a conscious decision to end advertising because, again, we couldn't invest, you know, a lot of money into a new website and keep the advertising at what was a pretty modest rate. In the interim, yes, we have picked up advertising, and we're going into the fourth quarter. That's when most of the business gets done for 2014. So my prediction is, and I may be wrong, but I think we can break even by next June.
Wow.
I don't think that's even very optimistic. I think that's pretty realistic. I think we could break even a lot earlier than that. But our burn rate's pretty good, you know what I mean, because we pay people and because we have constantly updated content. It's not Insider Louisville. I'd say we probably spend per month on what Leo spends per issue to print.
Yeah. And paying writers. I mean, that's really your expense. It's technology, paying writers.
No, the print's the expense for a printer.
Yeah, for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to print, I don't know how many copies Leo prints. Well, if you're the Courier-Journal and you print 113,000 copies a day,
yeah,
that's a tremendous expense.
Well, that's what I've always said. Is like the reporting's the same. It's just they've got all this expense because they got to print the paper. They got to do all these other things that cost a lot of money. Whereas on the internet, for a news operation,
well, it's not just print. I mean, they do have to do layout. I mean, we have the, you know, the cascading style sheets and the WordPress platform, and so what we do is, you know, I mean, we don't have the latitude of doing a laying out a paper every day, but we also don't have, you know, a room full of graphic artists sitting around either.
Yeah, and the deadline. Now, how many posts on a typical day are there at Insider Louisville?
Yeah, I have no idea. The first post goes up at 7:30, and sometimes if we have stuff, we'll post all the way through the day. Like today, probably the last post will go up at 5 or 6.
Okay.
But if there's other stuff that needs to go up, it'll go up until, you know. I mean, I think the latest we've posted is midnight.
Wow. Okay. Any highlights in your 3-year existence in terms of big stories, stuff that you really think you did well on that maybe you got ahead of the other media in town?
I think the first story we had was pretty amazing. We broke the fact that Jewish Hospital, University of Louisville, and Catholic Health Initiatives in Denver, they were going to merge. Mm-hmm. And we got it leaked to us from inside Jewish Hospital. You know, that really set the tenor for what we've done ever since.
Right, because what I'm impressed with you really do is you really go after getting those stories and breaking those stories.
Well, we got a big story for the Monday business briefing. It's a really big story. Again, in the healthcare sector, we got a couple in the real estate sector. But, I mean, it's just really hard work. You know this. I mean, you know how hard it is to get the story you got on the Courier last week. That's a hell of a story.
Yeah, well, you know, back in the 90s when we were only coming out once a week and trying to beat the Courier once a week, that was a different kind of challenge, but it was hard. It's hard when you're...
The challenge for us is to beat ourselves every day.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it when we have a down traffic day.
Yeah, and it's like we always say, the beast needs to be fed, and it's constantly... hungry.
Well, and that's the model. And then what we have to, the big riddle we have to solve is how to keep this really interesting, how to build it, and how to add new technology capacity. Because, you know, the funny thing is, and since 2013, we went from about 20% of our traffic on cellular devices, wireless devices, to 60.
Wow.
And by this time next year, it'll be 70.
Yeah, I know it.
So
it goes that way.
Phones.
That's where you consume your media, you know. And I always look to young people. I know your kids are younger, but mine, you know, they don't ever pick up a newspaper. They don't ever really do email. They do what they do on their phone, and really that's about it. So it'd be interesting to see how that all that plays out. But anyway, I want to wrap this up. Thank you, Terry, for being on the Rusty Satellite Show, and thanks for keeping me on as an Insider Louisville contributor.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
So thanks a lot to Terry Boyd and Insider Louisville, and we will be right back.
Okay, and that was a really good time talking with Terry Boyd down at the InsiderLouisville.com offices down on Market Street in Nulu. What a good time. And this segment of the show, I got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about because this week has been a week of interesting news of things that I'm interested in. So let's launch into it. The big news of the week, if you're following the news media, you know everybody had there was a big school board meeting this week, and the Jefferson County School Board decided to raise our taxes for the sixth year in a row. Now, if you've never been to one of these meetings, though, you really don't get a feel for it from the news media reports. What happened was that the every year there is a maximum amount of tax hike that the Jefferson County School Board can impose on itself. It doesn't have to get any votes. It doesn't have anything. They can increase the tax rate on Jefferson County property taxes by up to, I think it's 4%, without any objection. There's nothing anybody can do about it. If the board votes to raise the taxes, they will raise the taxes. And they've done it for 6 years in a row. Now, this year they claim that the state has cut their funding so much that they just have to have more money to survive. And, you know, there some of that may be true, but a couple of years ago, again, this tax raise has gone up 6 years, but a couple of years ago it was in an election year, and I went as a reporter to one of these meeting where the tax hike was discussed, and I was just amazed. You really have to be there to know that the citizens that come out to voice their objections to the tax hike are vehement and passionate and rude. I have to say that they're rude to the school board members. Have to sit up there in behind their table, and they have to take this what I would call abuse from the citizens who just do not want to have their taxes raised for the school board. And the amazing thing to me is they sit the members of the school board sit there with very little reaction, and at the end everybody sits down, everybody's through speaking, and they normally just go through and vote to raise the taxes. And it actually didn't happen this time. They voted not to go with the 3.4% raise, and that was to the elation of everybody in the crowd. Everybody that was there was primarily, I mean, I would say 95% of the people there, according to news reports, were against raising taxes and felt like the school board should find a way to cut back and save money rather than try to maintain their programs. Now, the superintendent, Donna Hargens, a few years back, since she's been here, I think she's done a commendable job of getting rid of some of the fat. But we all think, most of us think, that the administration of the schools is where the money is wasted. There's a lot of six-figure salaries over there at the Van Hoos Education Center, a lot of administrators that a lot of the general citizens, most general citizens, think are overpaid. But Donna Hargens, when she came in, she got rid of some of that, but there have been media reports. I know John Bowl did a story about a year ago or so about how many six-figure salaries are over there. So basically, the citizens believe that the school board could cut expenses to make up for the losses in revenue from the state, but it's just they just can't do it. So what happened was they voted down the 3.4% tax increase, and but they came back. And then they came up with a smaller tax increase, and they voted that in. Now, I think, you know, the school board, this is the first time this school board has met, and they've got some what I think are some smarter people, or at least one smarter person on there in David Jones Jr., and he was behind the smaller amount, and maybe that was politically a good move for the school board to make it a little bit smaller, but it's never, ever popular to raise taxes. So, you know, that's what happened that, and if you're if you own property in Jefferson County, your rate just went up from like 70 cents to 71 cents. And just back in 2004, it was only 58 cents. So it's quite an increase consistently by the school board. So there's nothing we can do about that. But Anyway, that was a big piece of news. A lot of discussion about that in the city this week. But, you know, really, with going back to school, that's one thing that happens this time of year. Another is football. And this week, Charlie Strong had his kickoff luncheon. He got a lot of publicity for that. Charlie, I tell you, he's really come into his own as a coach. His fourth year here, he's become a very good speaker. And the biggest controversy over at U of L in football circles this week was the fact that Coach Strong, based on controversy around the country over the price paid for autographs of active players, simply said, we're going to have our fan day this week, and it's on Sunday, and they're not going to allow players to sign autographs. So on LouisvilleKY.com, my U of L writer, Gabe DeVerge, fine young man, wrote a piece saying that Coach Strong had gone too far, that people should be able to get autographs of players anytime they want. And it was the subject of a lot of discussion around town. I think that, I just never got into autographs. I looked up for Gabe's story. I looked up, tried to find a photograph of, I Googled in Bridgewater signing, and I found a little mini football that was selling on eBay for $150. Now, I don't know who buys this crap, but, you know, I know Teddy Bridgewater isn't getting a penny out of that $150, whoever that guy is making it. So, you know, it is a problem. You know, people come over and get autographs of college football players and college basketball players, immediately go onto eBay and try to sell them. It's taking advantage of the players. I'm sort of with Coach Strong on this one, just because I think autographs are silly, and I just don't think it's that important. I don't think the players should be taken advantage of until they come up with a system in which the players can share in the revenues, and maybe let players open their own eBay accounts and sell their autographs online or something like that. That would be the only way I think that would work. But Coach Strong instead is having a full scrimmage this week for fans at the Fan Day event. So, he's on top of the world. He can sort of do anything he wants right now. He's got a team that is likely to go undefeated. I saw an article this week. The top 10 college football teams have a chance to go undefeated, and I was really surprised. Louisville was at the top of the list, of course, but I was really surprised that Western was in the top 10. A writer for CBS thought that the Hilltoppers with Bobby Petrino might whip both Kentucky and Tennessee. Both are in rebuilding years, and then sweep through their conference. And, you know, it's possible. Anything's possible in football, and this is the time of year to be thinking of that. But very quickly, I want to address another issue that Gabe DeVerge told me about. There was a little Twitter war going on, and it's a media story because it illustrates the difference between what happens in sports and journalistic integrity and what entertainers can do. This involved Matt Jones over at Kentucky Sports Radio, who was basically talking about a rumor, and I'm not going to discuss the validity of the rumor, so let's just stop right there. But the rumor was that Kevin Ware, the Louisville basketball player, had been kicked off the team or had been dismissed from the team for rules violations. And the gist of the story was that Jones, as an entertainer who criticizes U of L frequently, was able to basically throw that rumor out there for the public to consume and see what happened. But then he went a step further and he criticized Louisville's media outlets, people like Eric Crawford, who writes for WDRB-TV, for not reporting the rumor, not doing anything. So Jones accused the Louisville media in general of not being critical enough of Louisville sports. So Crawford, if you follow him on Twitter, had a legitimate defense of that, you know, he reports news, but he doesn't report rumors. But, in sports, it's a whole different world than what I would call the real news. They have different rules and, you know, everything from how you get a free meal from the school every time you go to a game to the way that rumors are reported. It's all different in sports, and maybe it should be. So anyway, that's a controversy that's going on. But and I just had to talk about this one story because I just thought it was kind of funny. I'm a frequent critic of the state of Kentucky and its alcohol laws. I don't see why that state government can't control and say have the same rules for everyone. But, you know, we have dry counties in Kentucky, and I think about 100 out of 120 counties are dry. But down at Mammoth Cave, they had a story this week that they were going to stop selling alcohol at the store at the I think it's at the campground down there. And it's just kind of funny the excuse that they came up with for doing that. They'd started selling alcohol at the store there about a year ago, and the story quoted an official with the Mammoth Cave Park who said that basically he was going to stop alcohol sales because they'd had like 40 reports of problems, I guess, because of people consumed alcohol, and it was more than they had in the past, and they just didn't want to deal with it anymore. So an inconvenience for park goers now, because, you know, I would say the officials are too lazy to enforce. They say they didn't have enough manpower and all that. So, you know, that's up to them. But come on. It's just kind of a funny story to me. I also wanted to talk about some culture stuff. I came across something this week. You know, Lyle Lovett is one of my favorite artists. He's my favorite people, too. Favorite, you know, famous people. He's really a clever writer and lyricist, and he came out with a piece in Esquire, and under the title was "How I Dress Now" by Lyle Lovett. I'll just read the first paragraph. I think it's really, really, really right on as the way you know, we might aspire to be in the way we dress. He says, "My take on how to dress is this: wear what you want to wear, do what you want to do, be who you are, pick out your own clothes, be a man." And if that's too much to ask, as it almost always is for me, think of someone you consider to be a man and pretend to be like him. And then he goes on and talks about he pretends to be like his dad. You know, too many of us, you know, I've told people, you know, I don't really buy clothes. I just wait for people to give me clothes. So I end up wearing things from former employers and girlfriends and you know, it used to be my mother would buy me clothes. I never felt the need to buy clothes. And, you know, I think if I listen to Lyle, I might have to change my way. So that was a very interesting piece. If you get a chance, it's at Esquire.com or on my Facebook feed. I put a post to it, Rick Redding on Facebook. The other cultural thing that happened this week, I'm just really excited about TV. There's so much good TV on right now that I just don't have time to watch it all. But I did buckle in on Monday night, on Sunday night, and watch the premiere of the last season of Breaking Bad. Now, you know, That's the series in which Walter White is a high school chemistry teacher. He finds out he has cancer, and he uses his chemistry skills to become the producer of the most pure, wonderful meth in the world, and makes a lot of money on it. And the show's been going on for, I think this is the fifth season. It's just outstandingly written. It's outstandingly produced. It's won many, many awards, and Walter White is quite a television character. It's just a pleasure to watch. I also saw the new movie with another of my favorite people, Larry David, called Clear History on HBO, and it's an extended version of Larry's character, I guess, on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and it's well worth watching if you like that kind of thing. And of course, we saw the fifth episode of The Newsroom, and the Newsroom is really, you know, among the best things on TV right now. The character Will McAvoy this week, his father passed away, and he had to. There was a moment on the air that was very poignant, and an interesting storyline in that. Olivia Munn, the very attractive anchor on the show, she had to. She had an old boyfriend that posted some nude pictures of her on a porn revenge site, and what she does in response is worth tuning in for the whole episode. You just have to tune in to see. So, anyway, that's some of the things that I've been watching and paying attention to this week, and it's really, really, really good stuff. So, we're going to move on. The next part of the show is my interview with David James, the Metro Councilman. He covers Old Louisville. He's a really sharp individual, and he... you know, was getting a lot of criticism for his vote to retain Barbara Shanklin after the ethics trial found her guilty of ethics violations. You know, I don't want to editorialize too much on that, but you know, what David says makes sense. On the other hand, you know, when I ask him, you know, what is the bar if an ethics violation doesn't get you off the Metro Council, what does? And, you know, David said that, well, we found she didn't steal any money. She didn't have it for personal use. You know, he didn't say this, but I will. You know, basically, she was stupid. I mean, I don't want people who aren't smart enough to know how to handle finances and programs and the neighborhood development funds that are entrusted with them. You know, but I know that we're also not going to start kicking people off the Metro Council for being stupid, because, you know, there's about four or five of them that might get my vote for that reason alone. But anyway, that's not what this is about. The interview with David James is really very interesting. I hope you'll stick with it. And here it is.
Very happy to have as my guest today Metro Councilman David James, who is a former police officer and has been a very, in my opinion, a very active, very positive Metro Council. So, David, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. I'm sure it's your first podcast, right?
It is.
All right. Well, what's in the news right now? And I wanted to ask you, you know, a lot of media, a lot of other people have really gotten their opinions up and been critical of you because of the whole situation with the Barbara Shanklin vote and the vote to retain her. You were one of the seven mm-hmm. Council members who voted to keep Shanklin on the council. And I know you had a press conference today. You wanted to talk about. I was imagining that you must have like been getting so much feedback on it, you felt like you needed to clear the air or whatever. So what did you have to say today?
So I've had a lot of people sending me emails and calling me and approaching me on the street and talking about the Barbara Shanklin hearing. And a lot of the conversation that I had with those people was filled with a lot of, I guess, called Barbara Shanklin urban legends. And so I wanted to dispel a lot of those that I seem to be repeating myself with constantly.
Okay.
And so some of them had to do with Gary Bowler, which is her grandson, that it was the source of some media input early last year, I believe it was. And so the question was asked, well, how did Gary Bowler, a relative of Barbara Shanklin, end up working for Metro Government? And so, and that's not right. And so I said, well, there's a lot of people that work in City Hall who have relatives that work in Metro Government. There's nothing illegal about that. Number two is they say things like, how did he end up working for her anyways? They shouldn't be able to do that. And the answer is that she was given permission for that to happen by the Ethics Commission. The third part of it is they say, well, you know, he's an ex-offender, and why would he be working for Metro Government? Well, Metro Government has a lot of ex-offenders working for it because, you know, we're a compassionate city. The mayor talks about that all the time. And we try to give people second chances in life.
Okay.
And so that answers that. The other thing that I get confronted with often is, oh, hey, you know, Barbara Shanklin, she's a thief. And I try to correct that thought process by letting people know that the police department looked into whether any funds were stolen. The special prosecutor looked into whether any funds were stolen, and both of those said no. During the hearing that we had, which lasted about 8 days, there was never one mention of her stealing any funds. And so there was absolutely no indication that Barbara Shanklin stole any of the taxpaying dollars. Number two, a second part of that is, and which wasn't talked about very much, but Barbara Shanklin turned in receipts for every year that mm-hmm. that program was in existence. And the auditor looked at that and said, there's no money missing. So I like to get that part out of the way before okay. I enter into that conversation.
Well, let me ask you the question I hear a lot on the street
sure.
and related to this, in that she was convicted of ethics violations.
Mm-hmm.
And the common question that I hear and that I've asked is, okay, she violated ethics campaign. What is the standard? What would she have to do to actually be removed from the council? How bad would it be? Or can you just do certain ethics problems and it's okay? Or is there a level at which you'd be kicked off?
You know, the Kentucky revised statutes say that if a person is found guilty of ethics violation, they may be thrown off of that elected body. And so it's really up to each individual member of the council to decide what that level is. And there's some people that want to put some articulation into the law that says what those levels are. For me personally, It had to do whether Barbara Shanklin, whether I believe Barbara Shanklin profited in an illegitimate way from providing these programs.
Okay.
And the answer was no. She did everything she did for the community. Now, if I had thought in any way, shape, or form that she had stolen money or her family profited from it, then, yeah, I would have voted to have her removed. But many people don't know this, but the way she got into it, because that's the other question they asked me is, well, she just created this program so that she could make money, and that's not it at all. The past administration was trying to get a $1 million federal grant called Weed and Seed, uh-huh. and they encouraged Barbara to start this program so that it would help the city qualify for receiving the $1 million. The city qualified in part due to Barbara's program of the ex-offender program. And so the $6,000 a year over 5 years, $30,000 roughly, that was spent on the program allowed the city in turn to gain $1 million.
Okay. Okay. So, all right. Well, I want to get on to some other subjects, and I know that's sort of been a divisive issue on the council, but tell me just to change the subject about your district and I guess, David, just really some of the activities you're involved in. I know it's you'll tell me where it is, but it covers the University of Louisville in that mm-hmm. area, and it seems like crime is a big issue that mm-hmm. in this part of town. So
it is absolutely.
What kind of programs are you involved with to fight that?
So I've done a couple things. I've done several things as it relates to crime. One of the things that, as you know, May 17th of last year, we had a very violent day in Louisville, mm-hmm. and that's what spurred the mayor's task force on violence and many other things. And so once I got into office, I had been working on violence issues, and it later became known as the Red Dot Program. And because the way that the police department identifies shootings and murders within the city on maps, crime maps, is by these red dots. Okay. And so in my district, I had a lot of red dots. And that's really not acceptable for me, because that represents someone's child, someone's family member, someone's church member, someone's schoolmate has been shot. And we oftentimes talk a lot about, we had so many murders this year. Well, murders are important because that means someone was taken away from us. But I think shootings are more important, and the actual act of violence, because the act of shooting somebody is either a murder or a shooting, and the only difference is shot placement and the doctor at the hospital.
Right, and we see a lot of this in the media. You know, every day it's like you hear, it's almost every day, you hear somebody mm-hmm. did something stupid because they were mad at somebody for going out on them or some sort of domestic situation, mm-hmm. and somehow a gun turns up and all that. And it just seems to me it's a very difficult problem to solve as long as these guns are out on the street and these people are doing these drugs and all that. Is there anything that, you can really tie these crimes to, or any prevention methods?
Well, one of the things, as I was mentioning, the Red Dot Program. So part of that is we teamed up with PSED, and they teach conflict resolution in our school system.
Okay.
And we combined them with another Dr. Eddie Woods, who does street intervention. And so what would happen is that Dr. Woods would, with what we called street captains, find out about a conflict that was going to occur in which a gun was often involved. And he would intercede in that and oftentimes retrieve the gun and turn it over to the police. Then peace education would come in and try to resolve that difference mm-hmm. in a nonviolent way. And we've been pretty successful in that. Another few things, that we talked about is we need more police. We have about 1,200 or so police officers. We're about 200 to 300 officers short for sister cities our size throughout the country. And so the way that we make up that difference now is providing in neighborhood development funds to the police department in the form of overtime.
Okay.
So we can't hire officers, but we can have them work more often. And so in the Victory Park area and in the old Louisville area, I've provided those neighborhood development funds to the police department so that they can have officers on foot, on bicycle, on ATVs, outside of the police car, where they're actually out interacting with people, talking to people, and doing some community-oriented policing to help cut down on crime.
Okay, now that sounds like, you brought up neighborhood development funds, mm-hmm. probably the most criticized, at least recently, as part of the Shanklin trial, as part of the Judy Greene thing. It's part of a lot of different criticisms of the Metro Council. And I know there's a movement afoot to make changes in the way those are administered. Do you think that's necessary, and how would you do that?
I think that, you know, Metro government is a living and breathing thing, and so we will always be making changes. So from the I guess from the Barbara Shanklin thing, you know, the rules, some of the things that she was charged with doing didn't become clear rules until January of 2012. When those rules were taking place in December of 2012, she came forward and says, "Hey, I've been doing this, and I think I can't do this anymore when these new rules take place." And they said, you're right. And so she quit doing those things. And so we've learned from that. And so there are some changes that we need to make in our NDF funding process, and some changes that we may need to make in the Kentucky Revised Statutes as it relates to how we remove people from Metro Council.
Of course. Well, what do you say to people who see these neighborhood development funds and they're not helping me, so I don't think they should be used to help them? Why don't we just eliminate the whole thing?
Well, what I would say to that is that neighborhood development funds help a lot of people in a lot of places. It is the lowest level of government that it gets to the people. So neighborhood development funds help install those sidewalk ramps on the curbing in your neighborhood. Neighborhood development funds help fund the nonprofit organization or the neighborhood association. For in my case, in Old Louisville, the Old Louisville Neighborhood Council is using neighborhood development funds to paint over graffiti in the neighborhood because the city quit doing it several years ago due to budget cuts. So neighborhood development funds do a lot of things. The ramps that you see in front of people's homes where they are handicapped and can't get down the steps, neighborhood development funds in many instances help pay for those things. And so I think that neighborhood development funds are great. I think that they're taxpayers' dollars, and that we should make sure that we're as transparent about those neighborhood development funds as we possibly can be.
Sure, and it seems like if it benefits a large enough group of people, you know, way back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, before you were even in the council, I kept hearing stories about Little League teams being sponsored by neighborhood development funds, little things like this that, I don't know, it doesn't seem like that would be the use, but what you're talking about, certainly there are good ways to use it.
I won't debate the Little League team. I think in certain neighborhoods and certain situations, those Little League teams help prevent other problems.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm all about trying to help alleviate crime and other problems that are in the areas that I represent. So if I am sponsoring the Blue Apple Players, for example, who's teaching kids about bullying, some people may say that that's not what we should be doing with that money. Well, I say that if we don't teach kids about bullying, then we pay that price later.
All right. Well, great. I'm going to wrap it up here, David, but I want to ask you something a little lighter. How are you enjoying being a councilman? I knew you like before you were elected, and you know, I know you've been a police officer in the past, is it challenging? Is it something you enjoy?
Oh, I love it. It's fun. I get to have some good, healthy debate sometimes. But mostly, you know, if I've had a hard week trying to get things done, the most frustrating thing to me about being a Metro Councilman is government itself. Government itself, in many instances, gets in the way of a lot of things just by its bureaucracy. And so that, to me, is frustrating. So to be able to cut through bureaucracy and help somebody that's been trying to get something done in their neighborhood for a long, long time, they keep running into this red tape, and I'm able to help cut through that and make things happen to make that community a better place or help that person, then it makes it all worthwhile for me.
All right, David. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate having you as a guest on the show, and you're the first Metro Councilman we've had on the show.
Celebrate.
Well, thank you very much, David James, for appearing on the Rusty Satellite Show. We do not have prizes for our guests, but hopefully they'll continue to promote the show. And I hope you will, too. If you've listened this long, please help us promote the show. We're looking, trying to get a sponsor. We're trying to do all kinds of things to make the Rusty Satellite Show one of the most listened to podcasts in Louisville and the state of Kentucky. So post it on Facebook. Do all that kind of stuff that you do to promote things.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.